You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
It's Tuesday, January 9th. We're talking some Indians baseball as we bring in Indians reporter for MLB.com, Jordan Bastian. Happy New Year, Jordan. Just over a month or so till pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training. We'll get into looking at the lineup, rotation, bullpen as it sets up for 2018. But first, let's just look overall at the offseason. From your perspective, when you look at the Indians in terms of their goals coming into the offseason, have they accomplished what they set out to do?
Well, I mean, they knew that there was a high likelihood of Carlos Santana testing the open market and getting a big contract, and he did exactly that when he left for the Phillies. You know, so that left a big hole at first base. You know, they weren't able to be a big player on some of the biggest ticket names out there on the market, but got an intriguing one in Yonder Alonso, a guy who had a career year last season, and the Indians are putting a lot of faith that in the idea that what he did last year, you know, while it was sort of an outlier for his career as a whole, you know, he made changes last year that they could look at and kind of say, you know, there were reasons behind this career year, and they have a lot of faith that that's going to be sustainable going forward. If that's true, then this could end up being a steal of a contract. You know, so he'll go back in the middle of that lineup. They obviously, a year ago, made a big splash with Edwin Encarnacion, so Yonder Alonso can go right in the middle with Edwin. You know, and the other goals, they didn't really need to do much on the rotation front. Bullpen, they lost Brian Shaw and Joe Smith in free agency, so there's still a chance that they could look to fortify that bullpen before spring training, before the season. But I would say right now the biggest goal going into the winter was solving the potential loss of Santana, and they answered that with Yonder Alonso, but it's tough to say right now whether that's going to be the last move of this winter.
Yeah, we'll have to see how it all plays out and if Alonso can continue off his career year from last season. Before we get more into the lineup and just seeing if they can even improve, they had a great lineup last year, sixth in all of baseball in runs scored. But in terms of moves that could still come, could there be bullpen help still out there for this team? Or if they stood pat, would that be just fine from the way you look at it now?
Well, I mean, they've got a pretty dynamic back end duo in Cody Allen and Andrew Miller. And while Brian Shaw logged a huge load over the last 5 years for the Indians, you know, they have guys that they could mix and match with in those sort of mid to late innings to bridge the gap to Miller and Allen. Guys like Dan Otero, Zach McAllister, and two guys who kind of stepped forward last year, seized jobs and pitched pretty well in Nick Goody and Tyler Olson. You know, guys are probably now going to see more innings with the departure of Smith and Shaw. So I think there's a lot of potential there for mixing and matching, but the depth chart behind that group still looks pretty thin. So I would say that, you know, maybe they're not going to go out and get a huge marquee name before spring training or before the season, but I would think that the idea would be to add as much experience depth, maybe take a flyer on a couple guys, add some more non-roster types, and come into camp with some intriguing guys who could maybe win a job out of the bullpen. It'll also be interesting to see, you know, when the bullpen mix, if one of the starting pitchers, because of the depth of rotation, winds up in the bullpen as well. So I think a guy like Danny Salazar, one of their starters, could be dangled as trade bait to solve a need somewhere else on the roster. You know, there's different things they could do, but they don't have a lot of money in terms of free agency. So I think if they're going to make another big move, it's probably going to have to involve some sort of trade, sort of subtraction in order to have addition.
Yeah, they may not have all that extra money to spend, but you can make up for that with versatility and depth, as you said, and that can help you go get a piece if you need to do that. Rotation-wise, I'm not sure how you can improve on allowing the fewest runs in baseball last season, 3.30 ERA. When they look at it going into the season, is it just, okay, let's just keep it going. We did it last year, same type of thing once more, or is there always room for improvement the way these competitors look at it?
Well, it's, I mean, from top to bottom, they have one of the deepest rotations in baseball, one of the deepest pitching staffs in baseball. And so I think that's where, when they say, okay, we lost a guy like Brian Shaw or Joe Smith in the bullpen, they know that they have the depth from top to bottom to potentially make up those innings. And that's obviously supremely true with this rotation that's headed up with Corey Kluber and Carlos Carrasco, who are both Cy Young contenders. Last year, Trevor Bauer took a huge step forward. You know, I think when you're looking at improving the rotation, it's going to have to be, you know, maybe you look at individually a guy like Danny Salazar. If he's, you know, continues to be part of the plans and doesn't get dealt in the trade, you know, this is a guy that still has a huge ceiling and is controllable for several seasons to come. You know, and they have a perfect example in Carlos Carrasco, who dealt with injuries, dealt with inconsistency, spent time in the bullpen, you know, and looked at one point in his career like, this guy's not going to figure it out. But they remained patient with him, and now he's a Cy Young contender. And so the Indians are sort of that type of organization that needs to have patience first. And so for a guy like Salazar, it makes sense to try and hold the ground with him and hope he develops. So I think when you're talking about improvement with the rotation, it's going to be sort of on that individual basis, not in terms of external acquisitions, because it would be hard to go out and acquire the type of guys at the cost that the Indians already have these guys in the fold.
We're talking with Indians reporter from MLB.com, Jordan Bastian. And Jordan, let's look at the lineup now going into the 2018 season. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Yonder Alonso, the big addition. Indians scored the sixth most runs in baseball last year, 263 they hit as a team. So overall, just looking at the lineup going into next year, do you feel Alonso can step right in for Santana and a seamless fit next to Edwin Encarnacion in the middle of that order? Are there any other issues that you see looming potentially in the lineup?
Well, the construction of the lineup is going to be interesting. You know, last year we saw Jose Ramirez sort of bounce around and then find a home in that number three spot. That number three spot had been where Terry Francona loved having Michael Brantley. He was a high contact hitter, you know, who may now be bumped down to five with you get Edwin in four. And, you know, where does Jason Kipnis fit into this, not only on the field but in the lineup? And Francisco Lindor is a switch hitter who showed a lot of power last year. You know, he spent time in the leadoff spot. You know, there's a lot of different ways to go. I think what's good about the lineup, what's strong about it, is it's pretty deep from top to bottom, and there's a lot of different combinations that you could do. It's not, you know, I don't think you look at this lineup and think, you know, a lot of those guys who would be in the mix for the one through three spots, you know, they could go in any one of those, and I think you could make an argument that it makes sense. But I think in all likelihood you're going to see Francisco Lindor at the top, which is where he ended last year. You're going to maybe see some mixing and matching in that number two spot. You've got Jose Ramirez probably entering the year as a three hitter. Then obviously you have guys like Edwin, Brantley, Yonder Alonso, and then it gets, you know, there's a lot of options for the lower third of the lineup as well. Guys like Lonnie Chisenhall, who fought injuries but had a great year offensively. Bradley Zimmer, who, you know, seems like his ceiling is extremely high. You know, there's a lot of ways to go with the bottom end, with the catchers as well. So Roberto Perez and Yan Gomes. Again, this looks like a lineup where you're not going to say this is the 1-9 order every night. I think you're going to see a lot of puzzle pieces being moved around by Francona, and he's done that expertly over the last few years with this team.
Absolutely, and that versatility, a manager loves that when he can mix and match and see who's, depending on who's hot, who's not, and be able to figure out the lineup as he goes. As we wrap up here, Jordan, was switching gears a little bit, looking at the Rookie Career Development Program. MLB continuing with that. It took place last weekend for the Indians. Catcher Francisco Mejia took part in that. If you could just talk a little bit about Mejia's progress overall.
Yeah, I mean, Mejia made tremendous strides last year. Two seasons ago, he obviously made a lot of headlines with his 50-game hitting streak. Last year, he continued to make the jump and develop as a catcher and then reached the big leagues before the season was over. This offseason, they had him go to the Arizona Fall League, try his hand at third base a little bit just to sort of introduce some versatility, because he's one of those prospects where maybe the bat is ready or almost ready, and they're trying to find a way to expedite his path to the big leagues. So you look at a guy like Jason Kipnis, for example. When he was a minor leaguer, he was drafted as an outfielder, and they moved him to second base because they knew that would be a swifter path to the big leagues. Not necessarily Francisco Mejia is a third baseman, but they're saying, let's bring you into camp with, you know, some more tools in your toolbox, and if you fit on the roster in a certain way, because the Indians already have two very capable catchers in Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez, who have built a great rapport with this dynamic pitching staff, guys who are established, guys that the pitchers love working with, you know, they don't want to necessarily disrupt that aspect of the lineup. So if you think Francisco Mejia is knocking on the door as a hitter, maybe you play him at third base a little bit, move him around to see if there's another way he can help the team. So I think that's going to be interesting to follow this spring, because I think Francisco Mejia is knocking on the door in one way or the other for the Indians.
Jordan, great stuff as always. Thanks so much for the time. Happy New Year. Talk to you again soon as the season approaches. I'm Darwin Zook. Thanks for tuning in on MLB.com Extras. It's Tuesday, January 9th. We're talking some White Sox baseball. We bring in White Sox reporter for MLB.com, Scott Merkin. Happy New Year, Scott. Just over a month or so till pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training. Before we get into looking at the lineup for 2018 and rotation and everything, let's just pause and look at the offseason. From your perspective, have the White Sox as an organization accomplished whatever goals they had in place going into this offseason?
Well, with the nature of the market, I think it's kind of hard for any team to say they've completely accomplished it yet, right? I mean, this market might be playing out right up until opening day at the end of March there. But for the Sox term, you know, they weren't involved in kind of the big-ticket free agents, so the development, the slower development of that area doesn't affect them as much. You know, they struck right away and got a catcher in Wellington Castillo. They got a steady force. Not that Omar Narvaez and Kevin Smith didn't do a good job last year, but they got a steady force behind the plate for the next 2 years, maybe the next three. They have an option for a third year with him. And that gives Zach Collins, their top catching prospect, another guy, Sebi Zavala, who had a great year overall in the minors, been a very strong run in the AFL, the Arizona Fall League, gives them time to develop. There's no rush on these guys. And that's one thing the Sox have been great on this rebuild, is kind of not force the issue at all. You know, let these guys really get to the majors when they have the best chance at sticking in the majors, not just having them make a quick appearance just to say, hey, look, we called up so-and-so, and then send them back down the next day. And then, of course, recently they made the trade where they got the three-team trade where they picked up Joaquim Soria and Luis Avila, and the bullpen needed, you know, some assistance. They kind of gutted the bullpen through the rebuild trades last year, and then Nate Jones, Jake Petrischka, and Zach Putnam all had season-ending injuries. Putnam and Petrischka were both non-tendered, so there was help needed in that bullpen, despite some good young arms coming back. And Soria and Avilan are both going to help this year. And now in this stage of the rebuild, where they're kind of, you know, still looking for development, but looking kind of towards that next level where they're going to compete, contend, they hope. Both these guys, if they desire, could be back, you know, next year or beyond that. So it's not just kind of not necessarily just kind of a sign and flip type of thing. It's like a guy like Anthony Swarzak or even Tommy Canley ended up becoming, even Tyler Clippard, who they acquired in a trade and traded like 10 days later. So guys that can help now and possibly help in the future. So yeah, I'd say overall they've done a nice job in this offseason.
Yeah, and I think the fans certainly excited the way the season ended last year. When you actually see, you don't just hear about all these talented young players, you start to see them at the major league level,
exactly.
See them starting to perform, and that allows everyone, the fans and everyone a part of the organization, to take a deep breath and kind of a lot of positivity going into the offseason. Let's look at the lineup while we're on it. Now, you mentioned Wellington Castillo as an addition. Last season, the White Sox finished 23rd in runs. They batted .256 as a team. But as you said, you know, it's a rebuilding time. But how do you see the lineup now shaping up in 2018?
Well, I think there's still some room for some things to change around. But you know, a guy like Yoan Moncada, who had some very good moments and then had some understandable struggles last year when he came up, he's a super talented kid who spent, you know, most of the 17 season as MLB Pipeline's number one prospect, is going to benefit from that, you know, whatever it was, 2 months he played at the big league level, whatever the numbers were. Fans, you mentioned about seeing those guys out there. Fans are just overtaken by this rebuild. They love this rebuild. Some I talked to are already trying to plan out. You know, they have like seven or eight guys who they want Nick Costa to learn the White Sox to draft with their first pick overall next year in the 2018 draft. So, you know, I think people have probably did too much trying to read into what Moncada was or wasn't last year. This is the year you're going to see what he really is all about. He's going to get, you know, 600 plate appearances, barring something completely unforeseen or injury or struggles. But you have a strong middle of the lineup with Abreu, Avi Garcia, and Castillo. You have some flexibility in that, you know, you probably right now have Anderson and Moncada up top, but both those guys could be run producers. You know, Adam Engel, I would say right now, and I don't think it's a stretch, StatCast numbers back it up, probably as good as any center fielder, maybe not, you know, Mike Trout, but right up there in the elite defensive center fielders, but they need him to hit quite a bit more. I mean, he hit in the 170 region last year. If he can even hit 230 or 240 with his speed and defense, he's a great asset to have. So, you know, still not a lineup that's going to probably strike complete fear into opposing pitchers, But certainly some good things there. And, you know, they got like Nicky Delmonico, who kind of burst on the scene last year, and he had a great run for most of the time he was with the White Sox. How does he adjust? How does the league adjust to him? And then how does he adjust in his second year? Not a lot of lefty, no lefty power bat per se in that lineup. A couple switch hitters. But again, still room to maneuver. But I think, you know, a decent force offensively. And again, based on how these young guys develop to supplement more established guys like Jose Abreu, Avi Garcia, and Wellington Castillo.
Yeah, and it's nice to have that balance of veteran guys
sure.
to show the ropes for some of the younger guys, and they get in a competition. They want to keep getting better themselves, a lot of the younger developing guys. So it's a neat mix of talent within that lineup. Let's switch over and look at the rotation. The White Sox allowed the eighth most runs in baseball last season, a 4.78 ERA as a team. So in terms of looking at the rotation, what do you see as the frontline starters and moving in? Is that something that could be improved on this season?
Well, I think the person fans are most excited to see in that rotation is Michael Kopech, and I don't think he will be there when the season starts. I think you know you can look at a path traveled by like Ronaldo Lopez or Lucas Giolito last year, and that's kind of what you'll see, I think, out of Kopech. He only made three starts for Charlotte last year at the end of the year after having a great run with Birmingham. So I would see him getting an extended time in Charlotte at AAA in the International League there before he comes to the majors. So at the season's outset, you know, you're going to have some young guys who, you know, again, gained some experience last year and had a good stint. You know, Lucas Giolito was once the number one pitching prospect in baseball, struggled in Washington, made some mechanics changes that just didn't fit with him, came to Chicago, struggled to Charlotte at the beginning. And then I remember talking to him when he came up and said that, you know, he kind of found a spot in Charlotte where he just said, okay, enough worrying about the prospect status and enough worrying about what people think. Just go out and pitch. And from that point on, things turned around in Charlotte, and he had a great run with the Sox. I think it was like a 2.33 ERA over seven starts. Carson Palmer, former number one draft pick, had a real good four-start stretch to end the season. And Ronaldo Lopez had some good moments, too. So you have those three probably behind, you know, a seasoned veteran in James Shields, who, let's face it, has struggled since he came to the White Sox. But by changing his arm angles last year, you know, over his last 12, 13 starts, was better for them on the mound. They need him to continue to do that. He's a key guy because you need the innings from him because you're going to have young guys in their first full season in the rotation who they're probably not counting on 200 or so innings across the board there. The fifth starter right now is kind of up in the air. You know, Dylan Covey understandably was overmatched last year in the major leagues. He was a Rule 5 guy who had barely pitched in the AA level. And I think he's probably best suited starting and getting time in the minors. Carlos Rodon is coming off season-ending arthroscopic surgery in September. At that time, they said, you know, he'd be out 6 to 8 months. I would guess it's a strong possibility he will not start the season with the team. So you can figure they're going to add a couple more veterans to that mix. And it could be through non-roster invite. It could be through a signing, you know, that's still to come. But good young nucleus, but still some work to be done in that rotation.
Talking with White Sox reporter for MLB.com, Scott Merkin, and let's transition over to the bullpen now, looking at that. Always a large amount of turnover, or generally within a team, the bullpen is where you see a lot of turnover from year to year. How do you see the bullpen shaping up going into the season?
Well, again, the bullpen, because so many guys got traded last year. I know if I list them all off, I'm going to miss someone, but there was, you know, Robertson, Canely, Swarzak, Jennings, Clippert. I think that might be all of them. And then, like I said, the injuries to Jones, Putnam and Petrushka gave a lot of young guys an opportunity. A guy like Gregory Infante, who I think it had been like 5 or 6 years since he had pitched in the majors, came in and was great for the White Sox last year during his stint, earning him a chance to come back and, you know, pitch again this year. I think a key thing is Nate Jones, who in mid-July had a nerve repositioning surgery that ended his season. And he's, you know, he's got electric stuff when he's on. Yeah, I think if you started the year right now, if you had to name one closer, you'd say, absolutely, this is my closer right now, it'd probably be Soria, just because of the fact that he's got experience too, quite a bit of experience as closing. And, you know, Jones is playing catch right now, but probably hasn't gone full force off the mound. So you don't know exactly where he's standing. He's supposed to be ready for the season, but you got to see it, you know, to move forward. But I think Nate's a key guy down there. And I think adding Avilan is a good guy because he's very good against left-handers. They have some good mixes down there. You know, this kid Vieira they got from Seattle can throw the ball 100 miles an hour. They have, along with Avila, they have Aaron Bummer and Jace Fry, left-handers. So, again, Rick Hahn, I don't know if, you know, they don't have a Mariano Rivera closing. I guess who does when it comes down to it? But they have a lot of options for Ricky Renteria, the White Sox manager, for kind of late-inning, high-leverage opportunities with these guys. And really, ultimately, as we've seen, Darwin, over the years, the last couple of years, I'd say, the bullpen has changed. You know, your closer still gets the saves in the ninth, but your best pitcher might be pitching out of a bases-loaded jam in the sixth and then working the seventh.
Absolutely.
So it's not so much about having that lockdown guy in the ninth and then, you know, piecemealing it together. It's kind of having that depth from the sixth, maybe even the fifth, to the ninth inning. And the Sox are, you know, starting to gradually build that a little bit.
Yeah, and sometimes you can see that develop in spring training as well. A name or two kind of comes out of nowhere, and you say, wow, okay.
Well, I mean, I'll give you an example. Last year, you know, if Juan Minaya doesn't get hurt before the end of spring training, Juan Minaya, who ended up closing for the Sox last year and will be a part of the bullpen this year, Anthony Swarzak probably doesn't break camp with the team. He probably goes to Charlotte.
Right.
Anthony Swarzak ended up being as valuable a reliever as the Sox had last year, traded to Milwaukee, had a great year, signed a 2-year, $14 million deal with the Mets. So, yeah, you never know. There's always a guy who comes up. You know, Zach Putnam was that guy a few years ago who comes up in spring training and, you know, he keeps getting through the cuts and you're like, oh, he's still here in camp. And then the next thing you know, he breaks camp on the team and he has a good year for the team.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes you just don't know. And as we wrap up here, Scott, MLB continuing with its rookie career development program. It took place last weekend. Outfielder Mike Rodolfo taking part in that. MLB Pipeline's Jim Callis caught up with Rodolfo at last weekend's rookie career development program. And here's what he had to say.
Mike, with the rookie career development program, how much did you know about it before you were told you'd be coming here? And how much do you think it'll help you when you get up to the big league level?
I heard about it from a couple guys that I played with before, you know, and we did tryouts and stuff. And they told me it was a really good program. And when the White Sox selected me to come here, I was very honored. And I think it's going to be very helpful because I'm learning a lot of things that I think are going to come in handy in the future.
How important was 2017 to you from a developmental standpoint? I mean, I do our White Sox prospect stuff, and I've talked to them about you for a few years, and it was always, boy, if we could just keep him healthy, we would really think he'd take off. And you stayed healthy, and you had a really good year, and then you went to the Dominican Instructional Program. How much do you think just staying healthy last year, you know, and getting some at-bats just really helped you develop?
I think it really helped me develop really good, you know. That was always the major key, being able to stay healthy and being able to do that this year. It helped me a lot, you know, progressing and moving forward. And I can't help but thank all the coaches and the Chicago White Sox organization, all conditioning and strength coach, for helping me set up a nice program that would keep me on the field and let me do my job day by day.
I ask you to pretend you're a scout for a second. I haven't seen Luis Robert play in person yet, but I heard he was down in Dominican Instructs. Now I know he's in the Dominican Summer League this summer. How good did he look? I mean, we've heard that he's kind of like the best Cuban since Yoan Moncada. How impressed were you when you saw him?
I was very impressed. His first at-bat of the Dominican Instructs was a home run, first pitch he saw. He cleared the trees. It was probably like 430 feet.
Jeez.
But the guy's a specimen. He can field, he can hit, can run, he can throw everything, you know, and he plays hard. So he's a really good fit for the White Sox, and I'd love to be playing next to him someday in Chicago.
Yeah, that probably could happen a couple years down the road. We've been asking everybody a couple of fun questions. What uniform number do you wear, and why do you choose that number?
I wear number 27, and because of Vladimir Guerrero. That's my favorite baseball player.
Okay. And then, do you have a celebrity lookalike? Is there anybody people say you kind of look like?
Andre 3000.
Okay.
I get that all the time.
Maybe a little bigger.
Yeah.
What's been the progress of Adolfo, and what type of player do we see in him?
Mikers, I can tell you right away, he's a great kid. I mean, I think if he can stay healthy and harness the immense skills that he has and get to the majors, he's going to be a star in Chicago because just a very outgoing kid. I did probably one of the first interviews with him during the Instructional League right after he signed. That same year he signed as a 16-year-old. And I remember a couple kids asked him for an autograph on the backfields of Camelback Ranch, and he was just in shock that someone actually wanted his autograph. Very humble kid. I mean, has really developed physically since he got there. Was kind of a skinny young kid at that point, and now, you know, a power-hitting outfielder. And he had his first real healthy year last year, although he kind of had a hand issue at the end. They cut his season short, but great arm, solid defensive player, good power, and just a great kid. So I think he's probably a little under the radar in terms of the top four or five prospects, but right there, and will, you know, is in the mix for what shapes up to be a very strong White Sox outfield of the future.
Scott Merkin joining us. Scott, thanks very much, as always, for the time. Great stuff, my friend. Happy New Year. We'll talk to you again soon as the season approaches. I'm Darwin
Zook. Okay, thanks, Darwin.
Absolutely. And thanks for tuning in on MLB.com Extras. It's Monday, January 8th, and we're talking some Tigers baseball. We bring in Tigers reporter for MLB.com, Jason Beck. Happy New Year to you, Jason. Just over a month till pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training. Went by fast the offseason, and before we get into the lineup and rotation and how everything's shaping up going into 2018, obviously it's a rebuilding time for the Tigers. They're getting younger, a lot of veterans, Justin Verlander, J.D. Martinez, Justin Upton, Ian Kinsler traded away over the last 6 months or so. And looking specifically, Jason, in terms of the offseason, have the Tigers accomplished as an organization what they set out to accomplish?
Yeah, by and large. I mean, they've been able to trade a lot of their veterans and get some prospects in return. It was a little bit more of a challenge on some of those deals. They were hoping for a bigger deal on Kinsler than maybe they got, but the no-trade clause kind of limited their available suitors. But, largely between that and signings of Mike Fiers and Leonis Martin, they've been able to get most of it done.
And if you look at any potential moves that could still be coming down the pike here in the offseason, you wrote a little bit about shortstop Jose Iglesias. Is he someone that could be traded before the season, or will we still see him in a Tigers uniform when the season begins?
I mean, he could still conceivably be traded before the season starts, but I think as Al Avila was saying last week on radio, that there's really – you look around the league and there's really not anybody with that pressing need. And, they've addressed it elsewhere. I think that, Freddie Galvis going to San Diego took out one potential suitor, although San Diego and Detroit talked about Iglesias previous offseason and really couldn't come close on anything. So, most likely he's going to open the season at short. We'll see if, some situation arises where maybe they can get something done during the season, either on the trade deadline or maybe a little bit sooner. But, one way or another, it's almost surely going to be Iglesias' last year in Detroit because he's going to be a free agent next winter. And right now, just given where the Tigers are at, I would be very surprised if they pursued any sort of contract extension, given where they are now and the fact that they really haven't they've been talking about doing the opposite for the last couple of years.
Yeah, and let's look at the Tigers lineup now as a whole. Iglesias, if he's there, and the rest of that lineup, they've finished 18th in runs scored last season. They batted .258 as a team. How do you see the lineup shaping up and changes in that lineup going into next year or into this year, 2018?
Well, I mean, it's going to be a very different look starting at the top. Ian Kinsler is very solid, and very effective in that leadoff role. And now they have to figure out what they can do aside from that. Could a speedy guy like Leonis Martin get that job? Or would they be better off trusting it to maybe somebody like Mikey Matsuk? The middle of the order actually isn't badly off, assuming that Miguel Cabrera is healthy again. If you combine him with Nick Castellanos, the way he hit down the stretch, and then if he can get some sort of effectiveness out of Victor Martinez, and depending on where Jaime Candelario hits, you've got the makings of a heart of the order that can produce runs and drive in some runs. The question's going to be, I think, in the surrounding areas of the lineup, just where the guys on base are going to come from and how regularly they can get on base.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is a lineup, just looking on paper, where the team could score a lot of runs. They were middle of the pack last season, but where the team really struggled, and there's really no ways around this, is the rotation. The Tigers allowed the most runs in baseball last year, the highest ERA at 5.36. How is the rotation looking, and will we see improvements? I mean, there has to be some improvements just overall based on last season being such a struggle going into this year.
Well, yeah, it's a lot different looking without Verlander. I think at this point you're counting on Michael Fulmer to assume the role of ace. He should be back at full strength after surgery to kind of shift his ulnar nerve around over at the end of August, beginning of September. So if he makes the same type of comeback that Jacob DeGrom and others who've had that surgery have done, he should be pretty effective again. And unless something changes, I would assume that, you know, that he should still be around, although you still hear his name coming up in trade rumors, that they'll at least listen to interest on him, even though their asking price is pretty sky high. Really, if you're looking for improvement, I think the keys are going to be at the younger end with Matthew Boyd and Daniel Norris. You know, it's been basically 2.5 years now that they've been in the organization since coming over in the David Price trade. And they've had their moments where they've looked like guys who could be regular members of the rotation, but they've also had their struggles. And to date, neither of them has spent a full season in rotation yet. It's been stops and starts and trips back and forth to Toledo. And they need one, if not both of those guys, to step up and really kind of take that next step now. And if they're going to do it, the timing now would be pretty fortuitous, because you're going to start in 2019 getting some of those guys from the minor leagues, the pitching prospects who are expected to form the next rotation. They're going to be getting ready next season, if not by the end of this coming season. And you know, if the time is now really for Norris and Boyd to take that next step.
Right, and really to become leaders in that rotation moving forward too, as then even younger guys come up through the system, as you mentioned as well. And the bullpen, of course, on most teams, that's a big turning point in terms of turnover in the offseason, new names coming in and out. In terms of the Tigers' bullpen, what do you look at going into 2018?
It's going to look pretty similar to the way it did down the stretch last year. They'd like to sign a veteran reliever, but right now, the way the asking prices have gone, that everybody they've taken any sort of interest in has really signed with, you know, with contending teams for well more than what they would have expected the price to be. So it's a unless something changes, they're going to be going in with a lot of the same names, some talented arms, but aside from Alex Wilson and Shane Green, some very young arms. You know, he's gone. But Joe Jimenez has a chance to take a step and form a role for himself in the bullpen, either in setup or somewhere maybe in middle relief. You've got Zach Reininger, who had his moments down the stretch last year. You've got some other young arms who will have a chance to win jobs out of spring training if they can perform up to their capabilities and maybe hit the learning curve a little bit quicker.
And Jason, just wrapping up here, last question for you. I mean, obviously, when a team's going through a rebuild, it sometimes is difficult for the fans. But in terms of the lineup, you mentioned, I mean, they could surprise people, score a lot of runs this year. And if the rotation, guys like Matthew Boyd, Michael Fulmer have a bounce-back year and they continue to grow, maybe this team can exceed some expectations. I'm sure we'll talk more about this in the coming weeks and as we go through spring training. But do you see this team potentially exceeding expectations and maybe accelerating this rebuild process sooner than some might think?
I think it's a long-term rebuild unless they get some gems out of some of the guys they've signed. You know, if Mike Fiers has a real bounce-back year, that would help. If Leonis Martin can hold down that center field job, that'd be a huge help for them. But by and large, I expect it to be a struggle, especially given the strength up top in the division with Cleveland and Minnesota.
Absolutely, yeah. With those names up there and those teams at the top, it makes it a struggle for sure to try and rebuild and get back there, but it takes time. So, Jason, thanks as always for joining us. We appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again as we get closer to spring training. I'm Darwin Zook. Thanks for tuning in on MLB.com Extras. It's Tuesday, January 9th, and we're talking some Royals baseball. We bring in Royals reporter for MLB.com, Jeffrey Flanagan. Happy New Year, Jeffrey. Just over about a month till pitchers and catchers report to spring training. And before we get into 2018 and lineups and rotations and all that, right off the bat, manager Ned Yost had a bit of an accident recently, fractured his pelvis, but he seems to be doing much better. What do you know about that whole situation with the Royals manager?
Well, I just spoke to him yesterday morning, as a matter of fact, and it was really a horrific injury. He easily could have died from the fall. It was a 20-foot fall back in November out of a tree stand. And Fortunately for him, he had a cell phone with him, or he probably would have bled out that night. And they almost lost him on the operating table, too. They just couldn't stop the bleeding. So it was a really bad fracture. And, you know, the doctors had told him it would be at least 2 months before he'd be walking again. Of course, you know, Ned being Ned, he's already up and about. And he told me he was back up in tree stands over the weekend. And kind of a surprise, he said he'd be able to attend the Royals Fan Fest, which is coming up the 26th and 27th here in Kansas City. And I think that's going to be a bit of a shock to everyone, too, because I most people just thought he'd be lucky to get ready for spring training in February 13th. So good news there. Royals fans will be happy to know their skipper is doing well and getting better, and they'll be able to see him at Fan Fest.
Well, yeah, he's the epitome of toughness. And, yeah, I didn't realize quite the severity of the injury there. And, wow, that's great news to hear. He's already on the mend going forward. And in terms of what he's going to have to work with in terms of his lineup and rotation, let's start to get into that for 2018. A trade that happened fairly recently, Joaquin Soria, Scott Alexander, part of a three-team deal with prospects coming back, Trevor Oakes, Eric Mejia. Tell us a little bit about that deal as it stuck out as a pretty important one KC made in the offseason here.
Yeah, and Dayton Moore's made it clear that this offseason is about two things, trading some of his assets and restocking the farm system and then trying to trim payroll. And that deal kind of accomplished both things. He was able to get rid of $9 million out of the $10 million the old Joaquin Soria, so that will help the payroll. And then they picked up Trevor Oakes, right-hander, who the Dodgers thought enough of that they put him on their 40-man roster before the Rule 5 draft to protect him. And he'll certainly get a shot at the rotation. Young guy, sinker slider type of pitcher, and he'll certainly get a crack at spring training. Mejia is an infielder who can play third, short, second, has played some outfield too. The Royals have told me that they're going to concentrate on him as a middle infielder. Kind of fits their prototype of switch hitter, can run, a plus runner, good defender. So that's kind of the type of player that they go after. And he's certainly not going to be in their immediate plans, but he's going to be part of the restocking of the farm system. So I think they felt like they had a good day with those trades.
And as we look at the lineup now going into next season, obviously you mentioned it's a bit of a rebuilding time here for the Royals, no question, as they trim payroll, they get younger. The team finished 24th in runs scored last year. They batted .259 as a team. Still don't know. There's still no complete resolution to the Eric Hosmer situation where he'll be back or not. But how do you see the lineup shaping up and connected to what's going on with Hosmer?
Yeah, it's that's kind of the linchpin they're waiting on right now to see if they're up to afford him. And to do that, they'd have to trim even more payroll, which they could do. Certainly, they've talked about trading guys like Kelvin Herrera. That could save $8 to $10 million. Jason Hamill, another guy who's owed $11 million. Maybe even a Danny Duffy who signed through 2021. That would be some more money coming off the payroll. But looking forward to the lineup, there's still going to be some question marks. You're going to have Alex Gordon left, of course, Salvador Perez behind the plate. And then after that, they've talked even about trading Whit Merrifield at second base. So there's a lot of ifs in the lineup. Certainly expect to see Jorge Bonifacio, who had a really solid rookie year last year in right field. Probably going to see Paulo Orlando replacing Lorenzo Cain in center. Chester Cuthbert will probably replace Mike Moustakas at third. And of course, Raul Mondesi, who had been one of their top prospects for several years, he's going to get his chance to be the full-time shortstop. And he's had opportunities before, has not been able to hit at this level. So I think a lot of Royals fans and Royals observers are anxious to see if he can do it this time around.
Talking with Jeffrey Flanagan, Royals reporter for MLB.com, and switching over to the rotation. The Royals last season, middle of the pack in terms of runs allowed, ERA 4.61. What do you see from the rotation, how it's shaping up going into the 2018 season?
Well, I think right now their biggest concern is depth. They're going to have guys like Nathan Carnes, who was injured last May and ended up having thoracic outlet syndrome surgery. And he's hopeful to be ready for spring training, but he needs to have a full, healthy year. He'll be in the rotation. Jacob Junis was a rookie right-hander last year who gave him some solid innings and was really a kind of a pleasant surprise. I think he's going to have a rotation spot. And then you have the veterans above that, Danny Duffy, Ian Kennedy, and Jason Hamill. Now, of course, Hamill or Duffy could get traded or maybe both before the season starts. So, you know, a lot of ifs and a lot of question marks about the rotation right now. And after that, there really isn't a whole lot of depth. You're talking about a guy like Trevor Oakes and maybe somebody else out of the system. But Dayton Moore likes to go into each season with 8 or 9 viable starting rotation candidates. And right now, you just don't see that many. So I think there's going to be a lot of action going on in terms of trades or free agent pickups, affordable ones, before we hit spring trading.
And we talked about the bullpen a little bit right off the bat with that trade with Soria and Alexander departing from the team. So where does that leave the bullpen right now for KC?
Yeah, you know, Kelvin Herrera right now, if the season started tomorrow, he'd be your closer again. And that's really not a role I don't think he's very comfortable with. He was demoted from that role in September last year after several blown saves. And I think once he lost the job out to Mike Minor, who was 7-for-7 in September in save ops, and Herrera went back to a setup role, and he was just absolutely dynamite again, which may be his calling in life. He's a terrific setup guy. He's another guy who could get traded. So you move on down the list. You know, Brandon Maurer would be another guy who could be possible closer material. Willie Peralta, who they got from the Brewers, a hard thrower, has been a starter almost predominantly his whole career. But I think the Royals are toying with the idea of maybe making him a late-inning guy. So after that, you know, you got Ryan Buchter and Kevin McCarthy, heavy sinker guy. So, again, just, you know, it sounds like a broken record, but there's a lot of ifs, and it all depends on what guys that Dayton Moore is able to move and who maybe emerges out of the system. You know, we talk a lot about the right-hander Josh DeMont and his 100-mile-an-hour fastball. And he was coming off a disappointing year in the minors last year where he actually went down a level from AAA to AA. So maybe he bounces back and gives him some innings in the bullpen. So a lot of question marks that they hope to get answered in spring training.
Absolutely, and certainly a time of transition overall for the Royals organization as they move into the future here. And as we wrap up, the rookie career development program took place last weekend that MLB continues to do. MLB Pipeline's Jim Callis caught up with Trevor Oakes at last weekend's rookie career development program, and here's what he had to say.
Trevor, you're here at the rookie career development program, gonna, you know, get some training, go through some seminars, get acclimated for when you're up in the big leagues. And last night while you're here, you find out you got traded. Where were you exactly when you found out? Who were you with, and what was your immediate reaction?
Yeah, we were having dinner at the state capitol, and I got my phone started vibrating, and it showed up Dodgers, and so I didn't know what they were calling about. You know, I thought it was just, you know, they were asking if everybody showed up or something like that, because one of the guys wasn't able to make it, and it was Farhan, our GM, and he just kind of said, "Hey, Trevor, you know, we traded you today to the Kansas City Royals," and you know, that was a big shock, but, you know, a lot of mixed feelings right away, but it was really cool and, you know, good experience.
Has it sunk in yet, or is it still, I saw they already switched you into the appropriate top for your division. You're AL Central now instead of NL West.
I think in some ways it's kind of sunk in, you know, I'm still wrapping my mind around a lot of it, but I'm really excited for the opportunity. I think it's going to be good, and, you know, we'll see what the future holds.
I mean, it's hard as I'm sure it is to leave the only organization you know. Obviously, the Dodgers are pretty stacked. They just went to the World Series. They have tons of pitchers. The Royals look like they may be going through a rebuilding phase. Seems like your opportunity would be a lot greater in Kansas City than it might have been this spring in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean, that's up for the front office to decide. And, you know, I'm just looking forward to competing and you know, seeing what that opportunity is in spring training. But you know, the Dodgers took really good care of me, and, you know, I have nothing but great things to say, and I'm just super thankful and grateful for, like, everything that they've done for my career and just all the relationships and friendships I've made along the way.
You've spent parts of the last 2 seasons in AAA. What do you think you need to do to make that final jump to the big leagues? Is there any particular adjustment or something you need to work on?
Stay healthy. Yeah. You know, I'm working on my changeup and my off-speed. last year I kind of had some troubles with my sinker, and you know that's been my bread and butter for my career. And so far this off season, it's been really good, and I've made some good adjustments and really kind of figured it out again. So I'm excited to show up to spring training with a fresh start and a new organization and show them, you know, what I'm all about and work quick and compete. You know, that's what I try to do.
Okay, we have a bunch of fun questions we've just been asking everybody. What uniform number do you wear, and why do you wear that number?
I just picked 34 today, so that's my new number, and that's what they gave me. It sounded good to me. With the Dodgers, it was 88, so I thought it was like Bat Boy. That's what it looked like to me. So
or wide receiver.
Yeah, so. That too. So I'll probably not pick that number again.
Okay, how about, is there a celebrity anybody tells you you look like?
Not really. I haven't heard a whole lot.
Okay.
I mean, you tell me. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I don't have one off the top of my head. I don't know. It's like some of the guys have, yeah.
A couple
nobody ever thinks they look like the celebrity that they're told they look like. How about the craziest baseball experience that's ever happened to you?
Oh, man. I would have to say the whole team getting food poisoning in Michigan. That was probably the craziest experience.
Was it
guys,
where you were at Great Lakes and like La Classe?
Yeah, that was low A, and we were in South Bend, Indiana, and we were running in and back and forth to the bathroom during the game. I mean, guys, it was rough.
That doesn't sound like much fun.
That's a minor league experience for sure.
No, definitely. I don't think that happens in the big leagues. And then how about your favorite MLB memory from childhood? Do you have a favorite one?
I would say there was a game where Steve Finley hit a walk-off homer to get the Dodgers into the playoffs. That was a pretty cool game that I was at.
Oh, cool.
That was one of my favorites to watch.
You talked a little bit about Trevor Oakes before. He took part in that as he came over in the trade with Joaquin Soria and Scott Alexander departing. Tell us a little bit more about Oakes and what type of player he is for the Royals.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't really know a ton about him. He's been in the system. He's kind of been blocked in the Dodgers system in terms of rotation because they have so many good starting pitchers. So this was a good get for the Royals. It's a type of player that they've tried to acquire in the past, someone who's got potential, but maybe it's just being blocked in that particular organization. And he'll get an opportunity with the Royals, that's for sure. As we talked earlier about the rotation and the question marks there, he'll certainly get a good look in spring training. And a young kid, 24, has a really good fastball and a good sinker and a good slider, and just waiting for the right opportunity, and this might be it.
Jeffrey Flanagan joining us here. Thanks, as always, Jeffrey, for the time. We'll talk to you again soon as spring training approaches. Great stuff, my friend. I'm Darwin Zook. Thanks for tuning in on MLB.com Extras. It's Tuesday, January 9th, and we're talking some Twins baseball. We bring in Twins reporter for MLB.com, Rhett Bollinger. Happy New Year, Rhett. Just over a month about until pitchers and catchers reporting to spring training. Before we get into lineup rotation and how things are looking in 2018, let's just take a big picture look at the offseason. Have the Twins accomplished what they set out to going into the offseason?
Well, so far it's been a slow offseason in terms of the big, you know, names in the market. Not signing yet, you know, guys like at the top of that wish list for the Twins, guys like, you know, Yu Darvish or Jake Arrieta, Lance Lynn, those guys, Alex Cobb, those guys haven't signed yet. It's been kind of a slow-moving free agent market. The one thing they've addressed so far has been our bullpen, which they definitely needed to do. They found a short-term closer in Fernando Rodney. Also added a left-hander, a veteran, in Zach Duke to be a setup reliever for them. So that definitely was two holes they need to fill there. Potentially they could add another reliever, probably not likely. But you never know. They could always make a guy like Matt Belisle, but it wouldn't be a big free agent. I think more than anything, they want to get a frontline starter, and that's still the goal. So in that sense, nothing's really, you know, it hasn't been a bad offseason because obviously none of their top targets have really signed elsewhere because it's been so moving. But I think at this point, there's definitely some goals and some you know, unfinished business here with about a month left into spring training.
Yeah, and they did make a minor move in the last few days. 31-year-old outfielder Nick Buss, who won the Pacific Coast League batting title last season. He hit .348. They signed him to a minor league deal. Is he someone that could potentially emerge in camp and make the team and be a contributor? And also just expand on Justin Morneau, I see, returning to the organization as well.
Well, Nick Buss, they get a guy that has some major league experience with the Dodgers and Angels, at really strong minor league numbers, can play all across the outfield there, has some power in the minor leagues. You know, hasn't put together the major leagues yet, but a good depth signing. So coming off a great year at AAA, winning that batting title for AAA, El Paso and the Padres organization. He's still coming to camp, and he'll definitely compete for a spot there as an extra outfielder and be in that mix as one of the minor league free agents that they signed. As for Dustin Morneau, he's back. He's going to be in the Twins front office as a special assistant. Very similar role to what Torrey Hunter does, what Michael Kadire does with Troy Hawkins. They're all in that front office. The front office definitely listens to their input in terms of even free agency, in-season trades. But also the big thing, too, is that, going into spring training, getting that chance to be a special instructor there as well and to work with some of these hitters, some of these players. The one thing with Morneau, similar to the other guys, was that, such leaders in the clubhouse. I think they have a lot to say and kind of have a lot of wisdom to kind of dispel, to some of those younger Twins players right now. The Twins still have a very young roster, and Morneau is a huge part of the success for the Twins during his 11 seasons there, four-time All-Star, MVP. The move isn't quite official yet. I think they're going to have a full-on official announcement here in the coming week or so, and probably have some sort of conference call, I'm guessing, or at least with Dustin Morneau to talk about his new role here. But certainly exciting news. He's a huge Twins fan favorite. He'll be in the Twins Hall of Fame almost assuredly in a few years here for the career he had with the Twins. But definitely a fan favorite and exciting news for the organization to have him return.
Yeah, absolutely. It never can hurt to bring someone like Morneau back into the clubhouse. Just having him around some of the younger guys as well, it's definitely a positive thing. And good segue as we look into the Twins lineup going into 2018. They finished 7th in runs scored last year in baseball, batting .260 as a team. How do you see the lineup shaping up here moving forward going into this season?
Well, it's going to look a lot similar to last year. If you look at that roster right now, not too many changes on the offensive side so far this offseason. None really expected in a sense. They have a very young core. You can kind of go around that diamond, and all those guys are under contract and under team control for several more years, except for, Maurer and Dozier during the last year of the contracts. But so many young guys, valuable positions, Polanco at short and Sano at third, and the outfield full of young guys. Out there was Buxton in center field, and, you got Kepler in right and Rosario in left. So, yeah, there's a lot of options. The big difference is going to be what they're going to want to do at DH this year. Talking to the front office at the winter meetings, they were kind of more on the side of you kind of want to rotate some guys through that spot a little bit more. Maurer's getting a little older. He likes to DH here and there to kind of get off the seat from first base. Sano's coming off the surgery. You got Escobar's had a very good year last year in the second half, especially. You got Robbie Grossman, who had a very high on base percentage last year. Kenny Vargas is more of a prototypical DH with his power, but he's never really put together yet consistently in the majors. So it's going to be a lot of the same faces from the Twins to go out and get a veteran bat. They've been linked to Mike Napoli a little bit, but nothing's really come of that yet, just because I think the Twins like to have that flexibility at DH. But otherwise, the key of the offense is going to be the young guys taking a step forward. We know how good Buxton was during his breakout second half, but the same could be said about Rosario. Same could be said about Polanco. Those guys had second halves that were very good as well. So I think if they can continue to build on that and get better, that's going to be the big key. But obviously it's going to be a tough go in that division with the Indians for the clear favorite.
Absolutely. Anytime you're in the division with the Indians, it's definitely a tough competition there. But yeah, maybe Mike Napoli, we've heard rumors. Maybe he's someone that could still be coming into the fray as well. Looking at the rotation, Twins middle of the pack last year in terms of runs allowed, 4.59 ERA as a team. How is the rotation looking? Can there be improvements going into 2018 based on what you see?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the big thing last year is that it made a big improvement to be middle of the pack. So they had the worst ERA of their rotation the year before that. So keeping middle of the pack was definitely an improvement for them. A lot of it was, the defense was better too, which certainly played a role in that because they're not really a big strikeout heavy staff. But Irvin Santana was an all-star for the first time since 2008, had a great year, was the anchor of that rotation. Jose Berríos, a big prospect they'd loved for years, finally had the big breakout year they've been hoping for. He set himself as a firm number two and could even be the number one starter this year if he continues to take strides forward. Kyle Gibson had a great second half, but still fits with an ERA above five. And then after that, they got some young guys they like. Alberto Mejia had a nice year last year in terms of being a rookie and some of the promise he showed, but still has a lot of work to go. He's not a guy that pitches deep into games, doesn't really trust his stuff yet, even though he has very good stuff as a big lefty. So beyond that, Phil Hughes is coming off of thoracic outlet syndrome surgery again, so you don't really know what you're going to get from him. But as of right now, he might be penciled in until they make a move. Otherwise, a lot of young arms I really like. Steven Gonsalves, a top prospect. Same with Fernando Romero. Trevor Mays coming off of Tommy John surgery. So they have some options there. But at the same time, I think at this point, it's pretty obvious the Twins really want to add a starter to the top of that rotation. Whether it's going to be Darvish or it's going to be someone like Lynn or Cobb or even Arrieta, or they make a trade for somebody, they're going to get somebody, I think, this offseason. I think I'd be very surprised if they didn't add at least one quality starter, because I think right now the one issue is they have some of those young arms, but I think in terms of the depth, I think they'd rather have somebody up top in that, Barrios and Santana mold that could be a top of rotation than somebody that's kind of a question mark. So I do think they're likely coming free agency, but I don't think they're done yet in the sense that they'll definitely find a way to add a veteran starter.
Talking with Twins reporter for MLB.com, Rhett Bollinger, and wrapping up, looking at 2018 coming up, the bullpen, you mentioned some young arms and coming out of the pen. What do you see in terms of the bullpen here going into this season?
Well, as I said earlier, the Twins obviously added Fernando Rodney to be their closer. Zach Duke is a lefty who's had a lot of success the previous seasons, but is coming off of Tommy John surgery that he came back from last July, had a quick recovery. Twins are hoping that he's going to have better command in the second year away from the surgery. Outside of that, some guys had some good years last year that were, kind of young arms, guys like Taylor Rogers, Alan Bucinich, and Trevor Hildenberger probably was the best of that group and could become a future closer because, as I said earlier, Roddy's kind of more of a short-term solution. But other, young arms in that system as well, they like a lot. John Curtis, Gabriel Moya, JT Chagois, Jake Reed, Tyler Jay. There's some intriguing arms there in the minor leagues that are close to the majors as well. Otherwise, in terms of the veterans that have been around for them, Ryan Pressly and Tyler Duffy had kind of tough years for a lot of home runs given up, but good strikeout numbers for both of them. I think that they've got a chance to both bounce back, but both of them have a lot to prove there in spring training. So the bullpen still is a little bit of a work in progress in some ways. A lot of it's going to kind of depend on how the older veterans kind of mesh with that young group of arms they have. But at the end of the day, I think Hildenberger is kind of the key to that guy as kind of a weapon, as a sidearm reliever. We'll kind of see how the rest of that group does.
And right as we wrap up here, a name you did mention earlier, Steven Gonsalves. MLB Pipeline's Jonathan Mayo caught up with Gonsalves at last weekend's Rookie Career Development Program, and here's what he had to say.
All right, Steven, first off, coming here to the Rookie Career Development Program, what did it mean to you that the Twins wanted to send you here, and what have your takeaways been so far?
Yeah, we're here with an elite caliber of guys. The Twins, everyone's sending four guys, that they're expecting to put up next year or whenever they go, but it's exciting to be around this type of elite performers.
I know, the ultimate goal is to get to the big leagues, but when you're in the minors, you want to try to move up over the course of the season. Tell me a little bit about your 2017, because you did pitch your way up to the highest level of the minors.
Yeah, it was fun. Got to work with all the guys that I've been with the last couple of years. I've always started behind my draft class and then got brought up and got with my pitcher and catcher. I got Mitch Garver back there who got sent up to the big leagues in September. And it's been nice, having him be up there a little bit before me and then him kind of teaching me the ways of, how it is at each different level. And he's been my big guide to helping me adjust through each level.
What were the biggest things that you needed to adjust from in making that jump in season this past year? And how do you think that helps sort of inform you as you're getting ready to, hopefully making that jump to the highest level?
Yeah, I think just need to be a little bit more consistent. I've been working on my slider a little bit. That's going to be huge for me this year, hopefully. And, staying with that curveball and, just trusting it and being able to trust myself and going out and throwing it. That's going to be huge. Big leaguers need four pitches to get through and have a long longevity career.
Yeah, you're talking about how you being sort of a half step behind, so to speak. Has it been hard for you to be patient and sort of trust that process and knowing that things are going in a maybe too slow for your liking, but the way it should for you?
Not at all. I mean, the organization has every right. They have my brightest future for it. That's what they're looking for. And they just know I'm going to take my bumps and, it's all about adjusting and I'm just taking it step at a time.
You go into spring training while you're at the highest level, and it's not like you're guaranteed a rotation spot, but I would imagine that you're tasting, the idea of that first call-up. How do you stay within yourself and trust that kind of thing will happen when it's meant to?
Yeah, you just got to take it one step at a time and know everything's a learning process and just be able to trust yourself and trusting the club that they have your future set for you, and, you just got to wait your turn and enjoy the ride.
All right, a couple fun questions for you. The first one is, who is your celebrity lookalike?
Celebrity lookalike? Gosh, that's tough.
I'm going to think about it. We'll come back to it. I'll ask you a couple of others. I'm sure there's somebody that people tell you, oh, you look like so-and-so, but we'll get to that. What's your go-to uniform number? Like, if you could have one number when you get the biggest, what would it be?
51.
Why?
Trevor Hoffman was a huge impact in my life. I went to high school with all three of his sons, and, you know, being a San Diego kid, you know, walking into Petco Park or even Qualcomm back in the time, you know, hearing Hell's Bells come on, gives you chills as a kid, pumping the rally flag in the playoffs. Nothing better. And then, of course, Randy Johnson, big lefty, can't get better.
Your stuff is just like Randy Johnson's too, right?
A little bit lower than that, but we're getting there.
What's the craziest experience that you've had in baseball?
Craziest experience? I would have to say I threw a no-hitter in seventh grade. It's the only time I've ever been close. I've had a couple, you know, decent starts, but nothing that extreme.
Do you have a favorite? You mentioned Trevor Hoffman, but do you have a favorite, like, major league memory from when you were a kid, going to a game, watching a game, something like that?
I remember in, I believe it was 99, when the Padres came back from the World Series against New York. I'm a very little kid, but I watched the parade, and Ken Caminiti threw me down a baseball with a little picture of him on it, and so that's a good memory to have.
That is a good memory. All right, celebrity look-alike?
I'm going to say Channing Tatum.
All right.
Just because I like it.
Tell us a little bit about the progress Gonsalves has made here going forward.
He's made a lot of progress. He's definitely one of the top prospects for the Twins. Not a lefty who throws very hard, but very good control and a good changeup, and developing curveball that allows him to rack up the strikeouts despite not really hitting much higher than the 90 on the radar gun. He's definitely in the mix in terms of coming into spring training with a chance to make the rotation. It would be, you know, a surprise if he were to come out of, you know, the spring training and be on the opening day roster as a fifth starter, but you never know. I mean, last year it would have been a big surprise for Adalberto Mejia to be in the opening day rotation, and sure enough, he was, and he beat out Jose Barrios. So it's hard to predict what will happen in spring, but he's a guy the Twins have liked for a very long time. You know, got him in the second round of the draft several years ago. He's done great throughout all the levels throughout the system. He's had a little bit of shoulder problems here and there, but nothing ever, you know, too serious. Mostly just been a little bit of stiffness. Kind of back off of him because it's such a big process. You don't want him to kind of have any further injury. But there's a guy that should make his debut this year at some point. I said, I think it would be a little bit of a surprise if he made it out of spring training. But I do think that he'll be in that mix and definitely in big league camp with a chance to make that rotation. And my guess is I think he will make his debut at some point in 2018.
Rhett, great stuff as always. Should be an exciting year upcoming. And we'll talk to you again as the season approaches and spring training gets closer. Happy New Year to you. And we'll talk to you again soon. I'm Darwin Zook, and thanks for tuning in on MLB.com Extras.